Magic.
And the world of illusion.
Magic TV.
And Craig Petty. Proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
My name's Craig. It is 9 o'clock and it's time for another Talk Magic. Now, I'm here today with an absolute legend of the British magic community, somebody who has been there, done that, bought the t-shirt and has been incredibly successful at everything he's done throughout his whole career. He's now starting a new magic convention up north and the lineup is insane, absolutely insane. The Wizards Weekend, Chris's convention. I am, of course, talking about the legend himself, the one and only Chris Cross. How are you doing, Chris? You all right?
I'm good. I'm really good, Craig. Thanks for having me on. It's the first time I've been on your show. And, you know, you've had everybody on here. So it's great. It's great to be on.
Well, I can shut it down now I've had you on, mate. That's it. I was all just building up to this moment. So
I've watched all your programs and you call everybody a legend. You can't fool me.
Yeah, that's because everyone I get on is a legend. You know, the amount of people I turn back, you know, there's a lot, actually. But more seriously, genuinely, before we start talking about the convention, of course, I'm very excited about it and I want to talk about it. But before we do that, you've had an amazing career. Like, you've done so much and you've had such a high profile presence as a magician, as a performer. For as long back as I can remember, you've always been right at the very top, you know, and it's incredible to see how much you've achieved at such a young age. I mean, it's just amazing. It really is. For people that don't know who you are, is it okay if we talk a little bit about you and your origin story first of all? Would that be okay, Chris?
Of course.
Brilliant. So let's start at the very beginning and let's start the origin story. So tell me, Chris, how did you get into magic?
Well, it's the usual scenario. I was the fat bully kid at school. My friend learned a magic trick. Brought it into school, the coin vanisher from Magic Box, with a crocodile clip, bit of elastic and a safety pin. Sorry for revealing that big method, Graham, but that's the trick that I learned. It was £2.49 and I went into school and started performing magic with my friend that showed me the coin vanisher, and we upgraded it and bought the Raven because we saw David Blaine doing it on the telly. Not that that's the method that David, you know what, I'm not a member of any magic club, so I don't mind saying this. I'm not getting booted out from anybody. So yes, we carried on learning more and more magic tricks. And then as I went on and learned more, I started being known as the magic man, the magic kid, the cool magic kid. So I liked this, and I liked the reactions that I got in the schoolyard and things. Then when I was 13, Cynthia Neptune from the Northern Magic Circle junior section, of which I was a member, and she was very good, and it was a good thing to be part of. And it's not on anymore. They abolished the junior section of the Northern Magic Circle, which is stupid. And they wonder why memberships are dwindling. It's because the old guys die and the new ones aren't there anymore. So anyway, the junior section was really good. Cynthia Neptune took us on a little field trip to the Whitley Bay Playhouse to watch Paul Daniels, and we were on the front row, and I was 13, so I'd been doing magic for 3 years. And when I was watching the master at work, that's when I knew I wanted to be that guy on the stage, and I wanted to do my own touring one man theatrical magic show around the theatres. So when I was 13, that's when I realised I wanted to do it for a living, at which point I started going around all the bars, the nightclubs, the strip clubs, the casinos around Newcastle, working for tips. So I would rock up to a venue on like a Tuesday when it was really quiet. I'd just bump off school, and then turned up and asked to speak to the manager when they weren't busy, and they would come down. I'd say, hey, I'm a magician. I would be wearing a suit. I was always tall for my age. And I would just walk the walk and talk the talk and say, I'll come to your establishment on Friday, Saturday nights, Monday, Wednesday, student nights, and I'll do magic for tips. And they were like, does it cost us anything? No. Can we promote that you're going to be there? Yes. All right. It's a deal. There was no, can I see your ID? I mean, you wouldn't get a 13-year-old kid on a Tuesday rocking up to a nightclub in a suit saying, I'm a magician. Can I do tricks for tips? So they just assumed, which worked for me. And I started working the bars when I was 13 for tips. And then when I was 16, I left school to become a full-time professional magician. And when I did that, and to turn full-time pro at 16, I started calling the venues and saying, hey, do you want me coming in during the Sunday dinners to do some close-up magic when people are eating local Italian restaurant? I'll come in and perform on Friday, Saturday nights when it's busy, takes the heat off your staff. I'll work the tables. I'll not take tips. I'll just take a set fee and that won't affect your staff, all the rest of it. And they all said no, because we already use such and such or such and such and such. And the same two or three local names are coming up, which is fine, but I realized that it was going to be a little bit harder to cut it as a full-time pro than I originally thought. So I'm a big fan of inventing my own work, if I don't get it. So for example, I've been asking Blackpool for that. I know you're very closely affiliated with them, but I've been asking Blackpool for about 5 years if they want to book me. And then we saw next year, great idea, next year. So I'm putting my own on. That's what I do, Craig. That's what I do. I don't have time to mess about. And if I wasn't getting the gigs when I was 16, so I became a street performer. And by doing that, I'm working every day. So I invent my own gigs. If people don't help, I do it myself. It's fine.
But that's such an amazing attitude to have in business, you know, in any business, but especially as a magician. You know, there's so many people out there that sit there and wait for the phone to ring and then worry why the next gig's coming from because the phone's not ringing. Well, that attitude is, well, you know, I'm going to go out and I'm going to make it happen. You know, I'm not going to sit there and watch things happen. I'm going to go out and make it happen. That's such a great attitude.
You've got to. No disrespect to anyone that I'm saying here. I do have views, and if I'm doing an interview, I don't like to piss about. I want to, you know, speak. You know, I'm not one of these brown nosing magicians who says this, that, and the other to say the right thing to do. That's not my style. That's not what I do. Otherwise, I probably would be doing all this stuff. But you know, I think being an individual and having principles and having your own style, not just in performance but in life, is good. That's a good thing. Don't conform to the rest. I mean, I've had a lot of lessons to learn, and I've got many more to learn. You know, one of my favorite quotes is, experience is something you get after you need it. That's so true. It's so true. It really is. So going back to the story, when I was, sorry, my voice has gone. It's Monday morning now. I don't know when this is going out, but it's Monday morning. It's early, and I've just had the gigs of the weekend, and I'm dying. But hey, we're all good. We'll keep going. I don't stop, to be honest. I don't know. I've never had a day off since I was 30. Never. I'm not gigging on a certain day, but I'm still working. It's hard to switch between your personal life and your business life in this kind of game. I don't think you can. So when I was 16, I started doing all the street shows and did a little summer tour. And I went down to Torquay was one of my stops. I stayed with Zach Stone, who's a good friend and a fantastic magician. and I was doing street shows in Torquay. A guy from a local bar saw my act and said, "Will you come and do my talent show tonight at my pub, Albert's on Belgrave Road?" I said, "Sure, let's do it." So I went up and did it, and there was two acts out of six or something got through to the grand final, which was the next night. So I turned up to his pub the next night, did the grand final, didn't win. Well, there was a judge from a radio station, a judge from a local recording station, and recording studio for singers, and the prize was some free studio time because everyone was a singer apart from me, so I couldn't win. And then the third judge was Anne George from Trevor George Entertainment on the South Coast, and I didn't win, but she did give me a full season doing the holiday parks. So I went around all the holiday parks, and looking back, it was ridiculous the miles that I did, because I didn't drive then, and I had my box on wheels and my two-wheeler sat cart, and I would have to go from like Torquay to Bournemouth to Newquay to Hayling Island to Bude to Loo to, and it was like,
I know mental. I did the holiday park circuit for about 3 years, and looking back, it's like, I remember one day I did Torquay Sands, and then the next day I had to be at Eyemouth in Scotland. Like, it was just insane.
Crack, as that, like, that's basically almost, well, depending on which way you go, if you go via Wales, that's three countries in a night.
Yeah, right.
Driving, which is crack, as. Try doing it on trains and buses and taxis and not having a car with all your shit on a trolley. Wasn't ideal, but anyway, it turned me into, it gave me a stage show, because up until then I was just street performing and close-up magic. So by the end of that season I had a stage show, which was the same as the street show but presented on stages. So by the end of, I started off, I wasn't very good doing the first holiday book, but by the end of that season I had a show. So I started selling it and promoting it alongside everything else, and yeah, it grew and got bigger and better, and each year the gigs got bigger and better, the money got bigger and better. And when I got to 2010, that's a great example, yeah, for whenever people ask me about this. And in January of 2010 I was asked to appear at the World Buskers Festival, which is the most prestigious busking festival in the world. And it's in Christchurch, New Zealand. This was before the quake, this was 2010. And they get the best street performers, the cream of the crop at that time, working in the world, and invite them over. It was like 30 or 40 guys or whatever, girls and girls. And they asked me to perform there in January, which was excellent. And in February, so when the weather's shit, yeah, I'm out in New Zealand, making good money at the most prestigious busking festival with a wealth of talent, all these fantastic performers from all over the world, Japan, America, and Australia. So I did that in January. Then in February, I got a gig for a few weeks in Paris in a cabaret and burlesque club during the Valentine's season called Le China. So I did the burlesque and cabaret in Paris in February. Then in March, I was booked to go to Bahrain for the International Circuit Formula One, entertaining the Prince of Bahrain and everything in March for a few weeks. Then in April, I was going backwards and forwards on Greece's Got Talent, which is a bit like Britain's Got Talent, but in Greece. And that was an unusual gig. And then, but it was good, I enjoyed it. And then in May, I went to New York and Los Angeles and all around America and doing all the cabaret and burlesque bars and things like that and a few other gigs. Then June, July, back to England for Glastonbury and all the music festivals. August, up at the Edinburgh Festival, 25-night run, 25 street shows during the day, 50 shows plus guest spots, 70 gigs in 3 weeks. And then September, October, November, December, you've got your corporates, awards ceremonies, Christmas, So that was 2010, and every year it got bigger and bigger and better and better. Then it hit to 2011, and I checked my diary, nothing. So it had gone, whoa, and then nothing. And I'm like, well, there was some, but, you know, in the grand scheme of things. And I thought, oh, why don't I have any gigs? What's going on here? It took me a little while to realize that during 2010, flying all over the world, turning 21, getting my tattoo, buying my first house, I'd forgotten that I was a mere humble variety performer, a jobbing magician, a speciality act. I'd forgotten about that because I was flying all over the world doing all these big shows. And I thought I was Mick Jagger. I thought I was a rock star. I looking back, I'd just been a twat all year, thinking that I was great, getting picked up by people at airports and driven to hotels and all the rest of it. Radio interview here, TV interview there. And it was rock and roll, man. I was just going around getting absolutely pissed, having a fucking great time. I looked at my diary, and for 2011, there was just no bookings. So it had gone up and up and up. Every year, I'd got the gigs got bigger and better, the money got better and better, the clients had got better and better. And it was, you know, it was all good. But then in 2011, when I checked my diary, I had no gigs, nothing. Well, a few, but not many. And it took me a little while to realize why I didn't have the bookings and they weren't going up and everything like it had been for years. And it's because I was a twat. In short, I was an absolute bell end. I was going around the world, flying all over the place, getting picked up at airports, going to gigs, or on stage in five, do a radio interview, do a TV thing, go and visit some kids in a hospital, do this, do that. And it was great, but I just traveled the world, got absolutely shit-faced, and had a rock and roll lifestyle for the year. It was pretty good fun, don't get us wrong, but I'd forgotten that I was a mere humble variety performer, a speciality act, a jobbing magician, and as a result of being flown all over the world and making a fortune and buying my first house and turning 21, all in the same year in 2010, I basically was just a twat. Now, something to learn from that is it's good to have a mentor, not an exclusive manager, because that restricts things and contracts and all the rest of it. But if you've got a mentor or some sort of guidance person, or a bit of a, pardon me, a bit of a manager, but not exclusive management, which works for some people, not me. But if you do have somebody to say, whoa, no, you can't do that. You've got to do it this way. You've got to learn from this. You don't, you know, it's good. But me, I was just 21 by myself, traveling the world, getting absolutely hammered, doing these massive shows, having a great time. And I just turned into a bit of a wanker. And as a result, didn't get many bookings in 2011. The only places that would book me, because my act got quite wild, doing the contortion, escapology, the magic, it was the humor that was so close to the bone and so edgy and you know, it was fucking mental. It was a mad, you know, whoever saw me in 2010 doing a gig, you'll know exactly what I mean. You know, you were there. And yeah, it was just a bit mental. Got what I was saying now.
Well, I mean, it must be a really stressful situation. So you're riding high, you've had this incredible year, every year has gone better and better and better, and then you're in a situation where you go into a year with hardly any gigs, you don't get many gigs. I mean, what do you do? I mean, you've got this attitude of, hey, if something doesn't happen, you go and get it.
Well, so what I did
now, what did you do?
So the only people that would book me, I realized at this point, were sex clubs. So I did the biggest one in the world, which is Wastelands in Amsterdam. I did the Skin 2 North Fetish Ball. I did the Bizarre Ball from Bizarre Magazine. I did a Club Antichrist in London at the Coliseum. And I did all of these sex clubs. And then rock clubs would book me as well. Mm-hmm. Cabaret tents at festivals would book me. Fringe festivals would take me. So I did the gigs that I could. But then I met my long-term girlfriend in 2010, Claire. No, 2012, sorry, Claire. So we've been together for just over 10 years now. And she kind of got me out of that rut. And so I saw the light and then started a whole rebrand, got away from all of these rock clubs and things. I still do some, but just for variety, which is, of course, the spice of life. Mm-hmm. And I rebranded myself completely as a wedding magician, a royal magician, because I performed for Prince Harry and Prince Charles and Prince of Bahrain and all the rest of it, and dukes and duchesses up and down the country. And so I rebranded myself as a wedding magician, a royal magician, a corporate entertainer, and kept it clean, you know, changed my costume a little bit, and then started doing wedding fairs and stuff. But it worked, and the gigs got back up. Then I got another house and you know, carried on the where I left off after a little 2-year blip.
Did you at this point, because obviously up until that point you'd been focusing mainly on stage work, you'd not been doing as much close-up, I imagine, you know,
because... No, it was just the same amount.
Okay. So when you did the rebrand, were you doing more close-up than, because weddings, a lot of people want close-up, were you doing more close-up, or were you still doing a lot of stage shows as well?
I would say it was an equal split.
Okay.
So all the corporates for, you know, like team building days and brightening up AGMs or doing the trade shows with Escapology or whatever, like it was still a lot of work on stage or cabaret or mm-hmm. with doing bigger stunts and stuff like that. So I would say it was an equal split.
Okay. And before we carry on, because we've got to the point now where the rebrand happened, you're talking about rebranding yourself and you're talking about create, you know, you obviously had a brand when you first started and that evolved over time, and then you rebranded yourself at this point. Have you got any advice for people that are trying to find their niche within the entertainment industry? There's a lot of magicians that are watching this that are maybe struggling. I get this question a lot on the channel, like, hey, how do I make myself stand out? How do I make myself unique? You know, I come across as, you know, one of a million army of magicians that go out with an Omni deck and a Sharpie and do the same thing as everyone else. And you've always, regardless of what brand of Chris Cross we're in, you've always stood out and been original. So, I mean, is there any advice that you've got on that?
Well, you've just described my act as well. But I did something that nobody else does, which was the contortion act. As a dislocation performer, there's something like 10 of us in the world that do this weird body stuff. You know what I mean? I don't do it anymore, but I can easily get my elbows together in the middle. You know, I can skip with my arms, dislocate my shoulders, and do all this bendy stuff. So when I put the bendy stuff with magic and then threw an escape on the end, that was a unique different show that nobody else does. Coupled with my showmanship and presentation and humor, then you've got a show that nobody else is doing. So I think it's important to have a product that isn't being hammered to death by everybody else. But there's two words to showmanship, or to show business, I should say. There's three words to showmanship, showmanship, but there's two words to show business. And you've got to have the show. That's one half of the equation. So I've got the show, then the other half is the business. And you've got to concentrate on the business side and the branding side and all the rest of it. So once you've got something you can bring to the market, that there is a gap in the market for, which I did have, the contortion, Escapology, magic, comedy show, once you've got that, the other half to concentrate on is the business and the branding and the selling and all the rest of it. And without giving too much away, because I need to keep ahead of everyone else watching and make sure they don't steal my gigs. I'm not bothered, to be honest. I'm back on a hell of a deal. But I think certainly having a brand is a good idea. You think about Pete Turner, and you think, right, tattoos, mentalism. That's Pete Turner. You think about Daniel Johnson, the freak, and you think green beard, green hair, green, and you know, you think about these people that are successful and that do good, and what have they got? You know, what have they got that stands out, that's different, the distinctive? I used to have my hair like a sideways mohawk. It was like a huge thing. I remember standing in the foyer of the Winter Gardens about to go on the gala show, and a woman came over and said, "I really hope I'm not sitting behind you," which is quite funny. And I used to wear yellow and black. All yellow and black, big hair, stand out, the name Chris Cross. It's all, the whole thing was a character, a persona, you know, wearing sunglasses inside like an absolute knob end. But it's all memorable. It's all, you know, you've got this sort of costume, this character, this easily recognizable brand you can relate to, which is on all the flyers, all the posters, on the website, on me when I turn up, on my car, black and yellow thing, all the rest of it, you know. So I did the whole, so I think color scheme, costume, or you know, what you wear, I think all that's quite important, you know. I think that all helps with branding. So when I rebranded myself, instead of being yellow and black, thought, right, I'm going to be a bit classy and a bit, now it's gold and black. So it's not a far cry away from the yellow and black. So sometimes it's still yellow and black, but, you know, gold and black. And yeah, that's my advice on getting gigs. Good marketing, have a distinctive brand, sell something the other kids don't.
That's all it is, right?
Nothing
and work hard. And that's one thing that you do. You work hard. You don't seem to stop ever. Like every single time I'm on social media or anything, it looks like you're racing around doing like a million things at once.
Well, I don't stop. I really don't. I did 5 gigs this weekend, plus 2 photo booths out. We'll hire those out for a bit extra. And this morning, here we are. After this, I'm going into my shop, the Enchanted Rabbit Magic Emporium, which is in my front garage. So it's not really far from home. It's all right. Never too far from the oven if I want some dinner. And I'll be in there today sorting through boxfuls of treasures and organizing them all, rebagging them, pricing them up, Googling them, find out what the hell some of them are. Finding customers to buy them. So I'll be doing that today in the shop. Then, well, here's my list. That's Monday. There you go. Oh, it's gold. So yeah, I've got to, you know, I mean, you read this list and it's, I've got to pay a London congestion charge fine. As one of the jobs, I do this. There's a list of stuff to do. Every day I've got a to-do list. Whatever I don't get done on Monday, I'll go on to Tuesday's list, and then you end up with a list like that, and then have a mental breakdown, and then get help off loved ones around to get the list a little bit down, and then you're back on the road again.
Well, let's go back to, because obviously you talked about you rebranded in 2012 and became a wedding and a corporate magician. Obviously since then you've continued to be very, very successful, as you've said. But you've obviously branched out into lots of other areas as well. And you've just mentioned the shop. Like, what made you decide to have that aspect of your life as well as just performing? Because you seem very business savvy to me. And one of the things that most business mentors will say is, oh, you need multiple income streams. Was it a case of wanting multiple income streams, or was it a case of wanting to diversify away from performing, or what made you kind of move in different directions?
It was exactly what I was saying before. If the work's not there, you make it. You know, so all the gigs, good. All these weddings that come in, I do loads of weddings, but it's good money and it's easy and it's all close to home and I haven't got to travel around the world and think I'm going to lose my suitcase and is it going to come out on the conveyor belt? Is it not? You know, it's just a bit less. And I've got a nice gaff. I've worked hard for it. So it's nice to be at home for a bit. Whenever I'm going out and paying for a hotel room, you think, oh, it's only 60 quid. But then when you put the living cost of keeping this place running for the day, it's like it's the hotel room's a little bit more expensive, so I'd rather just stay at home. What was the question?
Just what made you decide to open up a shop and everything else that you do that's not performance related? How come you ended up doing that?
So it's when people were asking to book me and I already had a gig. Instead of just passing the gig on another magician and creaming 50 quid or whatever, instead of doing that, I bought a photo booth. So if anybody was getting in touch saying, hi, would love to book you for a wedding or for a corporate event or, you know, annual awards ceremony or whatever the hell it is. And they were giving me the dates, 18th of November, right? I'll check that for you. And I'm looking at the diary thinking, oh shit, I've got a book in there. Can I make it? No, that's their timings. Can I? No, they won't budge. So if I'm looking at the diary and I can't do the gig, then I send them an email back and say, listen, I'm not available for magic that night, but you don't want a magician. You want a photo booth. It's the in thing. Everyone's got a photo booth. It'll work much better for your event. And then the photo booth goes out with it. I send a few girls out with it. But then if someone gets in touch and they want the photo booth, and I look down the diary, 18th of November, it's booked out, but I am available for magic. Then I'll email them back and say, the photo booth isn't available, but did you know I'm a multi-award-winning magician and everyone uses a photo booth. They've been hammered to death. You don't want a photo booth. They're not very good anyway. But if you hire me, I can do this. So I bought the photo booth to be in two places at once to double my money on Friday and Saturday nights. That's why I bought that. We've got other things that go out. I mean, I bought Clara Business. In fact, We Fancy the North. So that's an event decor company.
Oh, great.
She does all of the centerpieces and sashes and table runners. Fresh floristry, artificial flowers, bride's bouquets, all the rest of it. So I bought her that company, so she did not the work, because the working person's a sucker, as we know. So you've got to be self-employed in this world. So Claire runs that business, Event Decor, which complements what I do. We recommend one another. So that's why I bought that business for Claire. I bought my first house as an investment. Second house is an investment. Third house to live in. What else? With the shop. So the Enchanted Rabbit Magic Emporium, going back there, if you don't have any work, you make your own. Well, when COVID hit, we all lost our job. You know, nobody had any work during the lockdown and all the rest of it, apart from the dodgy parties I was going out doing for all absolute Raj packets, having these COVID parties, which was fine. I went and did them. It was good fun. Money kept us sane. I did a few Zoom shows, which, oh shit. This is nice, but yeah, trying to do a gig and type. So I didn't have any work coming in, any money coming in. This gaff that we're in, I bought in December before the lockdown. The lockdown was in March, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So bought this in December. I was here in January. February, I was in Dubai doing a gig at the Dubai Mall for the big shopping festival.
Yeah.
And then I got back home about a week before the lockdown.
Oh, man.
But all the gigs that I had in my diary and the calculation that I made for paying the bills and all the rest of it, suddenly all that work was gone. Just like everybody else watching all the other magicians. I mean, what do you do when you lose all your income? And I bought this place. You know, I mean, the swimming pool, £16 a day to keep 30 degrees. That's a lot of money. That's in 10 days. Pardon me. It's 160 quid just for the pool. And you've got the gardeners and all the rest of it. And it's expensive, you know, and I calculated it all. And then I didn't have any work. So I had to make my own work.
Mm-hmm.
I put some old tricks on eBay, sold them, did okay on it, paid the bills. I mean, I wasn't using them. They'd sat in a drawer, a cupboard for years, like most of everyone's stuff. I bought this thing at Blackpool with a bloody salt shaker, and oh, it's just sat there, you know. I mean, shit, that one's yours. I'm joking. You buy all this stuff, and it just bloody sits there. I just use a pack of cards pretty much when I go out, and an Omni deck and a Sharpie. But the whole how do I make money in a pandemic was this. Who's working still? Lawyers, solicitors, doctors, nurses, emergency services people. Now, I know that a lot of collectors aren't professional magicians. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of, you'll know that the amateurs spend more than the pros. The hobbyists spend more money on magic than the professional magicians. That's what I've found anyway. So I started selling small parts of my personal collection, some autographed things, some, you know, Dante owned such and such, a Carter the Great lithographic poster that's been linen backed and all the rest of it. Started selling stuff like that and built up some good contacts in like America and Australia and France and Germany, places like that. And these contacts with doctors, solicitors, lawyers. So they were working during the pandemic and making a fortune, but they had nowhere to spend the money, nothing to buy. So I started selling collectible magic to all these people making a fortune who were itching to spend money. So I started selling off some collectibles. Then Derek Lever's stuff came up for 50 grand for his entire collection, his Taurus Magic Company. So I bought that. I bought the card collection, Clive Lee Warden's old company, with thousands of packs of cards and gimmick cards and all the rest of it. And I basically bought up some companies that were in collections during the lockdown, which has given me my own personal fantastic collection, probably, you know, one of the best private collections in England. Not the best, of course. You've got John Fisher and Eddie Dawes and Scott Penrose and a lot of other collectors that were all caretakers for magic for future generations. That's all we are. We don't own any of this shit. We're just looking after the next people. But my idea during lockdown, in a nutshell, was to buy and sell magic tricks. A lot of magicians were selling off the stuff because they couldn't afford the bills. I was buying the stuff and selling it for a profit so that I could afford mine. Magicians were retiring, passing away. So I was picking up full collections and all at, you know, relatively decent prices because people wanted the money during lockdown. So I was in this fortunate position whereby I did have a few quiz, got plenty of space, And I've got quite a bit of magical knowledge about props and makers and dates and history and years and how they work and who made it. And I'm learning new stuff every day. I'm like, I don't know what this is. Do you know what this is?
No idea. No clue.
Me neither. Just thought I'd ask. I'll have to find out. I'll put it on the Facebook group later. I haven't got a clue. But I'm learning every day. By the end of the day, I'll know what this is. When I see one again, I know who made it, how much it's worth, all the rest of it. So during lockdown, that's how I made my money, buying and selling magic tricks. And the company grew and grew and got bigger and bigger. And now it's the largest used magic dealership in the UK and Europe, probably in the world, apart from America, because those guys know how to do big.
And what's the name of the company, so I can put all the details down at the bottom of the screen?
It's the Enchanted Rabbit Magic Emporium. And it's incorporating the card collection, Taurus Magic, a bunch of other companies. I've got all of the rights to the Jack Hughes World of Magic, the Kendi Corsi creations, and I've bought up a hell of a lot of stuff. You know, I've spent way over £100,000 in the last year on magic, which is, you know, to sell on. I've got a big warehouse full.
Wow. That's great. Is that the reason? Because you've made headlines recently in that you bought Wayne's Ringo Rabbit.
Oh, here he is. I don't know. Can I flip this?
Yeah, you should be able to. I think.
There he is.
There he is.
There, I'll move. I'll try. There's Ringo. And this. Wayne Dobson very kindly gave me this. Do you know what it is?
It's a Blue Peter badge, isn't it?
Not just any Blue Peter badge. That is Wayne Dobson's Blue Peter badge.
Wow.
So wow. It seems right to put Dobbo's Blue Peter badge on Ringo Rabbit.
That's amazing. And did you buy him to sell him on, or did you buy him?
That's for me. That's for me. That's for my own enjoyment. I got. You know, I mean, the Richard Cadell kindly got me this set of sooty puppets, sooty sweet and so up there, and I've got a big collection. I like there's George Cavari's Thin Line Sewing. A Woman in Half, and all the, you know, I've that Soul Cards Pigeon Bowl up there somewhere, and I've got all sorts of stuff. So yes, Ringo is for my personal collection.
That's amazing. So where is your focus lying now? Is it on the shop? Is it on performing? I mean, you're a very busy performer still, but do you find yourself thinking, well, this has become such a big success? Do you find yourself kind of thinking, you know, maybe at some point I'm going to have to take a step back from the performing because, you know, the company is doing so well. If I go out and I perform individually, I can only be me whilst, you know, if I can put my time into that, it could be more profitable or, you know, where's your thought process moving forward?
Well, I'll never stop performing. That's what I enjoy, what I love. It's my passion, it's what I do. I'll never stop performing, I'll never retire. I'll be performing as long as I possibly can. You know, I'm not gonna say, all right, when I'm 50, I'm leaving. I could retire now, if I'm honest. I'm fine, I don't have to worry too much about anything. I've come from a two-bed flat, started working when I was 13, then 16, put my money in the right places, made the right moves, and I'm okay. But in terms of my future for my career and what I want to do for my own enjoyment and to make money, I'll always perform. My focus will always be on performing because it's the best and easiest way to make money. When you're selling stuff, you've got to have a product which costs you money and you've got to sell it. when you perform, you're all going to do, you piss about with a pack of cards for 2 hours, 500 quid, off you go to the next one. It's the easiest way to make money. And the expenses are very minimum. You know, there's no overheads apart from fuel, which add on to the price anyway. That's a top tip. If you're going out to do magic, let's say you charge 400 or 500 quid for a couple hours at a wedding, which is what I charge. But it's good because you can get like three on a Saturday. And then the photo booth goes out. So if you've negotiated a fee or stated a fee to the booker and they give you the thumbs up and say, yes, I'd like to book that, when you send them the invoice or when you send them your payment details with the total or whatever, doesn't matter where the gig is. Like if it's miles away, add on your expenses. But if it's just a local gig, 5 minutes from home at the local hotel, the local restaurant, whatever, always add 20 quid fuel. Because if they're paying you 500 quid to turn up and do 2 hours of magic, and you just cheekily add 20 quid on, it's not going to change their mind. They don't question it. They've already committed, made the decision that they want you. They're happy to pay £500 for you. An extra 20 quid is, it's all 20 quid now is almost like Poundland. It's fucking 20 quid, it's 20 quid. So if you add, especially when people are putting weddings on, a big corporate event, so they've got millions of pounds anyway, always add 20 quid. And then if you get, you know, if you get 100 bookings a year, that's an extra £2,000, right? That you've just creamed off the top. Which means in January, when you've got no gigs, you can just go away to Tenerife for a few weeks for free because you've been a little bit cheeky during the year and you can take, you and your partner can bugger off for a couple of weeks to Tenerife. That's what we did.
That's great.
What was the question?
That was, no, that was really good advice. That was awesome. Is there anything left? You've achieved so much. You've done so well. Any magician watching this?
Oh, sorry, Craig. Hang on. The focus is... I'll just sort this out. The focus... There we are. The focus is always performing, always magic. However, the shop is doing so well now. The dealership's doing so well. So it's difficult because during lockdown and COVID, I had no gigs. So I could just... do the shop. I mean, I wrote a book during COVID, the Jack Hughes, that's it, the Jack Hughes Ultimate World of Magic. This is a hardback 180 page book with a DVD, and it's a real book, and it's all about Jack Hughes. So I had plenty of time to do stuff during lockdown, about the shop and selling things and bringing out products and all the rest of it. I had loads of time in the world to do all that. Now that I'm back gigging, people are putting orders in, and I'm like there's some people that have put orders on my website like 10 days ago, and I still haven't packed it and sent it. I haven't found it yet. That's what I'll be doing today, and then send it out probably tomorrow. But I'm too busy now with gigs, the shop, with... So to answer your question of, am I going to step back from performing? Am I going to step back from the shop? No, I'm going to keep performing. The shop's going to keep growing. I'll probably just hire people.
Yeah.
To pack things and post things. And even if it's 2 days a week, to pack stuff and go to the post office, it saves me the time, which is, as Charlie Chaplin says, time is my greatest enemy. And it's true. You know?
Yeah.
Time is something that you can't get back and you can't put a price on and all the rest of it. So my focus is very much me as a performer, the shop, bringing out exclusive products, doing what every magician and every performer and every show person secretly wants to do, and that's to immortalize themselves, whether it be bringing out a trick with your name to it, whether it be bringing out a series of videos on YouTube, whether it be, you know, producing posters, the gigs, which people will collect in 100 years, like what I do, whether it's putting your name on the spine of a book. You know, we all want to be immortal. We want to live forever. And by doing these things, we do. So it's quite nice to focus on immortality.
That's so true. But Chris, is there anything left on your magical bucket list that you haven't achieved yet that you want to do? You've traveled the world. You've been very successful. You know, you live in a nice house. You've got multiple businesses. You've got a huge collection of magic. You perform at a very high level. You've done every type of gig you can possibly imagine. Is there anything left that you want to do that you haven't done yet?
Yes. So we're going to go to Egypt next week. I've always fancied going to Egypt, and I've got no bookings between this date and this date. I can't remember this, but next week, the week after next, I cannot remember. Anyway, we want to go to Egypt, I think, for 10 days. So we'll probably book that today. So I've never been there, and I love the Cups and Balls and the Galli Galli Men and all the rest of it. And there's a magician I know out there who's going to take me to the, you know, that when Penn and Teller did the magical mystery tour in Egypt, and I went and visited that Galli Galli descendant. He did the Cups and Balls, and his mum did the egg bag and all that. This guy I know in Egypt's going to take me to meet the Galli Galli descendant and watch his cups, and I'm going to buy an egg bag off him and all the rest of it. So I want to go to Egypt. There's a few other places in the world that I'd like to visit that I've not been to yet. Not to perform. I mean, if I get a gig, great. But, you know, just me and the missus want to go to a few more places. You know, I've been all over the place, but, you know, I want to go to safari and do this and do that. I mean, we've been in the middle of the Amazon rainforest and trekked through this place and all over Thailand and everywhere. But a few more places I want to do, a few more places I want to go to with Claire. And then after that, it's kids, isn't it? Hopefully. I don't want to be one of these people that has a kid and then gets all pissed off saying, oh, well, it's because I've had this kid that I didn't get to go to Egypt. I didn't get to go yet. I didn't get to do what I wanted to do. I've done pretty much everything I want to do. There's just a couple of more things, and then we'll probably do the whole kids thing if possible. If we're lucky enough, we'll hopefully have a few kids.
That's great.
And then I'd quite like to grow this magic convention.
That was going to be my next thing. My next thing was, let's talk about the magic convention, because, you know, you've already said you're really busy. You're a performer. You're running this company. You're traveling all over the world. You're gigging all of the time. So here's an idea. Let's go and do another thing. Let's go and set up a magic convention. I mean, it's mad. What was the reason? Was, you know, you mentioned earlier, you know, Blackpool, you know, so you made your own convention. Was that the main reason for doing it? Because that's cool. I mean, that's a great reason.
I would say that's the main reason for doing it.
But you've not done it by half, Chris. I mean,
no, you don't do anything in half.
The lineup is insane. I mean, can we talk about this convention? So it's taking place on the weekend of the 11th, 12th, and 13th of November, I believe. And the lineup is ridiculous. Like, normally when people start a convention, not the established ones like Blackpool and the IBM and so on and so forth, when most people set up a convention, it's normally a little one-day convention. Blackpool was. And they get like some local magicians, or maybe they'll splurge and get somebody from, you know, somewhere else in the UK. But it's all names that have done the lecture circuit a million times. There's no big names or anything like that. And then maybe it'll grow over time like Blackpool does, like Blackpool did. But what you have here is you've gone, right, fuck that. I'm going to do a full 3-day convention. I'm going to get some of the biggest names in magic that I can. And you know, it's just, I've never seen anything like this before. I've never seen a convention on its first year have the lineup that you've got.
Saves all the pissing about, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, backtracking on the Blackpool thing, and you ask him if I've got anything left on my bucket list. I'm not dissing Blackpool. I love it. I've got my tickets booked already for next year. I've got my big double dealer stand, my full page advert in the programme. You know, I thing with me with magicians, right, is I've never really rolled with the whole magician thing. I'll go to Blackpool, I'll not go to all these conventions and meetings. I'm not a member of any magic clubs. I'm not, you know, good friends with many magicians and all the rest of it. And it's the crack of, hi, how are you doing? You're keeping busy. How are you? You're well, you're keeping busy. It's just shit crack. It's the magician's job center having a meeting once a month to wank about the latest trick and ask each other what gigs they're doing so they can close in and steal those gigs. Or they say, how are you doing? Have you been up to much? Just as a lead in so they can talk to you for about 5 minutes about everything that they've been doing, and really you don't care, right? So I've never been into the whole magic. I mean, you hammer it, you fucking love it. You go to all of them, you love it. You can't, a lot of people love it. I've never been. Now that I've started this dealership, I've found that I've got to go to these places, do all these things and all the rest of it. Now, since I have started going back to them, because I haven't done them since I was like a junior, like years ago, 20 years ago. But since I have started going back to them, they're actually all right, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, I spent a few years away from them as well. And when you go back, you kind of miss it, don't you? You kind of realize, okay, actually, this is pretty good.
Yeah, so I've had like probably an 18-year gap of attending magic events other than Blackpool. And I went to the Magic Circle for the first time in my life 2 weeks ago, I think it was, for the Collector's Day. And everyone was lovely. Everyone was sound, and I was like, this is all right. It's not, they're not all twats. They're all right. And then doing the dealership, people are coming over and having a chat with you on the stand, and it's like, oh, you're quite sound, you know. Are you? And I've attended like all of the, well, a lot of the magic events in the UK this year with the stand, because I'm launching this new dealership and it's what I've got to do. But yeah, I'm getting back into the magic thing. It's good. It's all right. It's okay. It's weird though being a dealer because most dealers end up being dealers when they're like old and can't be asked to do gigs anymore. but like I'm young being a magic dealer, especially secondhand magic, like old used magic. It's crazy, but it's good. This is something that I probably envisioned myself doing in like 20, 30 years time, alongside being an entertainment agent. You know, that's what you do when you're old and you can't do it anymore. You can't be bothered to go out and do all the graft, as it were. But yeah, it's mad being a magic dealer now, but it's really good. And I am enjoying going to all these magic things. And one thing on my bucket list is I'd like to do the Gala Show at Blackpool.
Me?
No,
I was about to say, yeah, you. I'd love you to. I thought you'd done it before, Chris.
No, I've never done it. Never put me to do anything. I've offered to do exhibitions of magic props and magic history, magic posters, full, you know, museum style exhibitions, gala show, workshops, a lecture on marketing and business and all the rest of it, and you know, the business side to the show and all the rest of it. But it's always great idea, we'll do it next year. But I'd really like to do Blackpool, because Russ is doing a fantastic job in his team, both the Russes and everyone else. And you know, it is something that I love, the Blackpool Magic Convention. And I've got all this stuff sitting here on my table in front of me. And I collect magic programs, magic flyers, magic posters, And I'm so used to going through all these programs that I get to see if there's any signatures in, and what's this one? Have I got this one? Got my full set of IBM programs, full set of Blackpool program, full set of, and you know, I want to be on one of those. I like the printed things. I want to be on one of these programs. So that's on my bucket list. So hopefully I haven't ruined that. I've taught you to do.
I'll ring up Russ when I finish this.
Yeah.
So tell me about your convention. Let's talk about the lineup. Who have you got?
So it's the Crisscross Convention, the Wizards Weekender, 11th till the 13th of November. The lineup, as you say, it's 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I'm going to look at my poster because I forget who's on. Jamie Raven, Laura London, Daniel Johnson, the Freak, Mark Mason, who has got to be the best magic demonstrator dealer after Ken Brook, Mark Oberon, John Archer, Paul Stone, Noel Britton, Franz Harari, or as my missus keeps calling them, Hans Ferrari, so I keep getting mixed up. Billy Kidd. Now, Billy Kidd, you might not know.
No, I don't.
Ah, she's brilliant. She's so good. So Billy Kidd, well, just Google her. She's on. She's fantastic. She doesn't do conventions, which is brilliant. So Google her.
Okay.
James, you might not know. James.
No, I do. James. I've interviewed him on this channel. Incredible street performer.
Yeah, he's great. You know, he's, hang on, 10%. Let us click close. We're good. So James is on the bill, but a lot of magicians won't know him because he doesn't do all the conventions and all the rest of it. And so those are two nice gems, James and Billy Kidd. And then all the other guys I'm sure you've heard of.
That's amazing. And you've got lectures. Have you got obviously dealers? How's the format of the 3 days looking?
It's good. So there's a current lineup on the Enchanted Rabbit website now, which is, you know, you can look up www.thewizardsweekend.com or look at the Enchanted Rabbit Magic website and just click on the convention tab where there's a full lineup and times and everything that's been updated later today because I've just booked George Cavari. You know, a lot of the youngins watching this won't know who the great Cavari, pardon me, is, but he was on the Sooty Show, the Freddie Starr Show, and all the rest of it back in the day. And is it, you know, you like to use the word legend a lot, and George Cavari is a bit of a legend. He's been around a long time. He's in his 80s, and he doesn't perform anymore because he had a major stroke, like a huge stroke, you know, 20 years ago or something. And he's never gigged since. He deals in magic and you know, demonstrates the tricks on his stand, but at my show he's going to be actually performing for the first time probably in years, alongside the questions and answers. So we'll be sitting down, having a chat, then he'll get up and he will perform codology. and then he'll sit down, chill out, a few questions, get up, perform another trick, like the pom-poms or whatever.
Well, I mean, you think about his dealer stand, it obviously... Yeah, his pom-pom prayer sticks are just like the best. I mean, there's been so many imitations and copies over the years.
Oh, but... Yeah, well, they're not. It's not his trick, but he certainly made them for Ali Bongo. He was the maker for Ali Bongo's friend, and Ali Bongo's the guy who made them famous. So the Cavari pom-pom stick.
Memory, isn't it Cavari that does the passing water as well? The
passing water.
Oh, yeah. It's a great trick. I used to do that in my
life.
It's a great trick.
Now available, the big large comedy drill. and the two part passing water anyway. So he's great. I speak to him a couple of times a week on FaceTime and check in on him. I go and visit him occasionally and stuff, and he's a right character. So I've got him on the bill now. So that's good. You know, we've got a hell of a lot of people on the bill for this. You know, the great George Cavari, Mark O'Brien, Laura London, Jamie Raven, John Archer, Paul Stone, Fran Serrari, James, Noel Britton, Billy Kidd, Mark Mason, Daniel Johnson, me. It's ridiculous.
It's just a great convention. It really is. And I mean, wow. So there's gala shows and there's...
So there's lectures and there's shows. So there's a few lectures on the Friday. Paul Stone's doing a talk on Siegfried and Roy and the magic of Las Vegas. Laura London's presenting her one-woman show on a Friday night, Cheat, which is fantastic, all about card sharpening and things like that. This Saturday night, there's a gala show featuring, Jamie Raven, Mark O'Brien, John Archer, Fran Serrari, James, Freak, and myself. I think that's the lineup for that. And on this Saturday night after the gala show, it's the late night show with myself and John Archer. So that'll be a good laugh. Then on the Sunday, we've got more lectures and then a Q&A with Fran Serrari as well.
Wow.
So it'll be great. It's a fantastic. There's dealers, there's like a Magic Box and Discount Magic. Who else? Card Shark. There's a bunch of dealers. Sorry if I haven't mentioned.
Obviously, you've got Mark Mason there as well, who's one of the best.
Mark Mason, JB Magic. I'll be dealing with the Enchanted Rabbit. I think Dietrich's coming up, Mike. So there's a lot of there's dealers, there's lectures, there's gala shows. It's all going on, and it's in a nice hotel. It's not in some church hall or something. It's in a lovely hotel. It's in a 10 minutes from the A1, 10 minutes from the Metro Centre, 15 minutes from Newcastle City Centre. So you've got your train station and all the rest of it. It's in a hotel, so you can stay over for the night. And it'll be good. All the acts are staying in the hotel. The bar's open all night. It's not like 10 o'clock, you've all got to fuck off back to your rooms. It's open as long as we want it to be. I've got a big LED, huge video wall for the back of the stage, and to play videos and all that, not a shit projector and things, a proper big LED video wall. It'll be a real high-end thing in a nice hotel, and I've done it properly. I don't piss about.
And two things on this: how much are tickets?
£125 for 3 days, which includes all your gala shows and your lectures and all the rest of it. There's a couple of additional workshops for smaller groups, so should you wish to take part. But all of the registrants are getting emails soon with the details about these add-on workshops. But they're just little extras that you can pay for if you want to, almost a one-on-one kind of session.
That's fine. And
the VIP tickets are £175. And with that, you'll get a poster that's been specifically made, not the normal gig poster. I'm getting some lovely posters printed with all of the acts on, so that when you're there, you can get it signed by all of the performers, and it'll be a nice frameable collector's piece. So all of the VIP tickets get a nice poster each, and front row seats and all the rest of it.
That's great. That's awesome. And without being salesy, because you don't need to be salesy because this is doing really well, availability is limited on this. Because of the venue you're using, it's not like a Blackpool where you can have thousands of people. It is limited availability on tickets. Is
200.
That right?
Just 200. So capacity of 200, which means you can talk to all the acts, have a beer with them, ask them questions, go for dinner with them, whatever. And I like that. That's good. I was just talking to Dynamo a couple of weeks ago last week at the Leeds Magic Champ, and he said he's trying his best to get there. I've spoke to a lot of other notable magicians saying that They're just waiting. Everyone's waiting to see if they're gigging or not. Everyone's got an inquiry, apart from all the people that have booked. But we've got half the tickets left. So the availability is still there, but it has sold. And I'd imagine after next weekend, which is payday, and closer to the date and all the rest of it, that's when they'll all fly out. And during this week, I'm going to be posting more videos from some of the acts and doing a lot more social media stuff. It's just been in latest edition of Magic Scene. There's a big thing announcement going out about another special guest on Magic Week next weekend. And this is when it'll get really, this is when it'll sell out.
That's awesome. That is fantastic. I mean, you know what? You are right. I love conventions. I love magic conventions. I think it's fantastic. And I think what you've built here is going to be very, very popular. And I'm guessing you're planning on doing this again. Like, is this in your head something that would become an
annual convention?
Yeah, I thought so.
Of course it is. So it'll be an annual event. And yeah, this is the first one. So the dealers are supporting one, and the acts that are coming along this one, and everyone involved in this first one really will get first dibs in my respective future ones, because this is a brand new venture for me. And you know, I don't forget.
Yeah.
I'm like an elephant. Do you want to see my impression? No, that's all right.
No, let's not go there. Chris, this. So where can people go to book tickets? They can book online now by going to, there were a couple of websites, weren't there? You can go to
book now on thewizardsweekend.com or theenchantedrabbit.com.
Okay.
So you can book online now, standard or VIP ticket. And yeah, they're available. So go book your tickets. The hotel's offering a discounted room of £90 a night. When you work it all out, it ends up being quite expensive. But when you work out all the costs and the acts that are on the bill, and it's a 3-day thing, and you're getting your gala shows and all the rest of it, and it's quite an exclusive little thing, this, it's nice. Then it's worth doing. It's worthwhile. Parking's £3 in the car park at the back of the hotel the whole weekend. The rooms are £90, but that's based on a double or a twin room, and that's bed and breakfast. So it's only £45 each if you're, you know, going with somebody else, which works. And it's 5-10 minutes from the A1. And if you don't want to eat at the hotel or drink at the hotel, there's loads of pubs and restaurants and stuff around. It's in a sort of suburb of Newcastle, a small town called Wickham, and it's on Wickham High Street. You've got all these Subways, McDonald's, Greggs, all the rest of it. So it's, it's well located. It's a nice hotel. The acts are brilliant. The gala shows will be fine. And the lectures will be great. And we're all good, man. Like, come to the first ever Chris Cross convention.
That's amazing.
Roll
the dice. And I heard that one of the dealers that you've got there is my friend Steve-O Watson.
Yes, Steve-O's going to be there as well, yes.
Steve-O's amazing. Like, he's absolutely amazing. So that's good.
He's a really nice guy as well.
He really is.
As a people, he's a nice person.
Oh, that's awesome, mate. That is so awesome. Congratulations on everything that you've achieved, on all your continued success. And I know that this convention is going to be a huge success as well, because you don't, like I said to you at the beginning, you don't do anything by halves. You kind of,
I never stop, and if I do something, I do it properly.
Yeah, it's either all or nothing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can tell. I know this is going to be successful. Like I said, me and Ryland are going to be booking to be there. It's Ryland's birthday that weekend, so we're going to be coming up for his birthday treat. So we'll definitely be there.
But I'll not rope him in. You can just get drunk. That's fine.
Oh, that's cool.
Be there, but he doesn't have to be square.
Mate, this has been an incredible interview. Thank you so much. It's been a masterclass in how to get gigs and how to be successful. The stuff that you've shared here is just absolutely amazing. And I want people to do a few things. First of all, book onto the convention, because I know it's going to be amazing. Second of all, go check out your website. I mean, you know,
Enchanted Rabbit. I've got so many beautiful rare items. And the fact of the matter is, so I've got my shop, my physical bricks and mortar shop is my front garage. And we're open most Tuesdays. So make sure you like the Enchanted Rabbit on Facebook so you can see my open times, if I'm open this week, next week, whatever. It's usually just one day a week when I'm quiet. But you can actually pop in, pick stuff up, have a look at things, you know, examine some real old nice pieces of kit. And so check that out, the physical shop. And the website only has a very small amount of things on it for sale, because I haven't found the time to photograph everything, list everything, write the descriptions. There's over 10,000 different items.
Wow.
It's quite a job. It's quite a task. So you're better off having it in person if you can. Plus, if you're there and selling more shit that you don't even want.
Yeah, very true. And you're gonna have a dealer stand at the convention, so you come to the convention, that's another chance to see some of the stuff that you've got there as well.
Yeah, and if you're from foreign, yes, if you're an international viewer to this video and you want to buy some stuff from me, buy it and I'll bring it to Blackpool and you can pick it up and save your postage.
Win. That's great. Mm.
I've got loads of carrier bags full of props with different names written on, ready for people to pick up at Blackpool.
That's clever. That's awesome. Yeah. That's great. Chris, one more time, thank you so much for jumping on Magic TV. I really appreciate it. I can't wait to see you in November. And I wish you all the continued success, because, my friend, you definitely deserve it.
I work hard. I really do. I try not to be a prick about it. I'm pretty honest and straight. So if anyone wants to ask me anything, I'll either tell you the answer or not.
That's awesome. I like that. That's the sort of person I like. And I want everyone that's watching this video to go and leave a comment down below so Chris can see it. Go check out the shop. Go jump on the convention. Go and come along if you can and you're free. And yeah, Chris, one more time, thank you so much.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me on the show, Craig.
You're more than welcome. Guys, I'll see you again.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast.
Magic.
Be sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel.
Magic TV.
Which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.